Good morning. This morning, our first reading comes from the book of Zechariah, and I was mentioning to Father Mike as we were getting ready for Mass this morning. We don't get a lot of readings from the book of Zechariah. He's one of those Old Testament prophets, not as well known as Isaiah or Jeremiah, but the unique nature of Zechariah is that Jesus actually, in word and in deed, fulfills a lot of the prophecies of Zechariah. And this morning we get one of these prophecies that is fulfilled. Zechariah begins to speak to the people, and this is during the time of the return to Jerusalem, the second building of the temple. Is the time and age of Zechariah. So the children of Israel have been living in bondage, and they're all excited. They're getting to go back home to their land, and things are going to be different this time. Things are going to be different religiously. Things are going to be different spiritually, and surely things are going to be different physically this time. They're going to come back, and finally, maybe they're going to be a civilization with a kingship and leadership unlike anything. I mean, they had it once with David and Solomon, but then it drifted away, and maybe that's what's going to return. And they wanted a great king. If you've read the whole book, not just Zechariah, the whole book, you understand God gave the children of Israel a worldly king. The first king of Israel, Saul, was a king like other kings. Now, this doesn't mean to say that he's a horrible guy. He definitely had his failings. But he was a worldly king. He saw things in the mind's eye of the world, and he wanted to raise up a kingdom in Israel like other kingdoms that he saw around the land. And it didn't work out so well for him. David came in, and David was the alternate king, the king of a different nature, the king of a man after the heart of God. David had his failings as well. But David led the children of Israel under a righteous kingship, and Solomon followed suit with that and built the first temple. But then there comes the downfall of the children of Israel. They're taken off into bondage, and now they're coming back to this new temple that's being rebuilt for them. Their spiritual life, the life of living in the covenant of God is coming back into place. But Zechariah begins to tell of a different kind of leadership. The king is coming, but he's not going to be reigning with authority in the sense of a sword. He's going to be reigning with the authority of peace. Whoa, wait a minute. That kind of kingship doesn't sound like it's going to work out very well. The chariots are going to be done away with, and the mighty horses are going to be done away with. Wait. The chariots are intimidating. We need those. If we're going to intimidate other civilizations, other cultures, other people, we need the chariot. The king needs a chariot. Now, I know a lot of times, maybe because of movies, we've come to go, well, I mean, the chariots were just everywhere back in that day and time, but the truth is they really weren't everywhere. When an army would march on a city in that day and time, they would march in with massive armies. And the stories of the Romans marching into a lot of places is that they would march in such cadence that literally the ground would shake miles away. You could feel them coming before you heard them coming. And then you would hear them coming. If you weren't intimidated by the feel, you would get intimidated by the sound of them coming. And if that didn't do enough to intimidate the armies they were marching on, behind them would come the chariots and the charioteers. You might be able to run away from a foot soldier, but you're not going to run away from a chariot being pulled by a mighty war horse with someone riding the back of it with weapons. That was that thing that when once we eased up the forces, now we could really take them out because now we had the weaponry coming in. If you might imagine today, maybe it's a helicopter or a jet airplane or it's some other weapon of war that's overwhelming. We hear in the news reports of wars about shock and awe. The chariot in his day was the weapon of shock and awe. But the prophet Zechariah says, the king that's coming for us will have none of that. Wait a minute, but we've been captured several times. We know what it's like to be taken off into bondage. We need a mighty warrior for a king. No, that's not what God's sending. Many people ignored the prophecies of Zechariah because of this. It didn't fit their narrative, what sounded good and right and just to them. Surely God, who loves us, is going to send us a mighty king. And yet Jesus shows up. Jesus comes into his kingship with peace and authority, and not wielding the weapons of war, but wielding the weapons of truth and righteousness and mercy and grace upon the children of Israel. I think very often the places where we really miss our place with God is we have our own predisposed opinions of what God should do or would do in a particular situation or circumstance. And when He doesn't do it, we decide He hasn't answered our prayer. When the truth of the matter is, God is saying, I have answered your prayer. It just doesn't look like you wanted it to look like. I didn't answer your prayer your way. I answered it the right way. I didn't answer your prayer in a way that made you feel strong and mighty. I answered it in a way that brings about truth, that brings about continuation, that brings about my love and my way of life. That's not what I wanted. Let's try this again, God. I want it my way. I believe in your authority when I see your authority. God says, look around. Do you not see my authority in the day to day? Do you not see my authority in the sun that rises in the east and sets in the west? Do you not see my authority when the seasons change? You want to see my authority? If you haven't seen my authority, you've been ignoring my authority. But Jesus begins in our gospel reading today to give this message that to some is comfort, but to others is troubling. Says Jesus proclaimed, I give praise to you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, you have revealed them to the little ones, the naive, if you will. Yes, Father, such has been your gracious will that all things have been handed over to me by you, Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wishes to reveal him. Come to me. I talked about this last Sunday in the homily. Come to me, all you who labor and are burdened, and I will give you rest. That part we like, right? I'm laboring and I'm burdened. Let's lay our labors and our burdens down before the feet of the Lord. He's going to give us rest. Hang on, it gets better. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Okay, God, I was really good with that first sentence. I don't like this whole yoke idea. Take upon my yoke that you might learn from me. For I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. God calls us in a relationship with Him to step outside of our own expectations. To step outside of the way that the world might make sense of life and to say, you know what, God? I don't need this to make sense to the world. I need this to make sense to you. Lord, I don't need to understand what the world understands. I need to understand what you understand. I don't need to know what the world thinks about God. Lord, I need to know what the Father has revealed to you and you've chosen to share with me. It doesn't matter to me if it matches up, because the reality of the matter is it probably won't. It probably won't match up because the world doesn't understand God the way that we're called to understand God. Paul, I feel like, elaborates on this in his reading today from Romans. You are not in the flesh. On the contrary, you are in the Spirit. If only the Spirit of God dwells in you. There's the question mark. If only the Spirit of God dwells in you. Whoever does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to Him. If the Spirit of the one who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, the one who raised Christ from the dead will give you life too. Are we living in the Spirit or are we living in the flesh? What part of the powers of life around us are really driving our desires, or really driving our conversations, or really driving the things that we do and the things that we don't do? Are they desires of the flesh or are they desires of the Spirit? Can we look at the things that are going on in and around our lives and say, Lord, I see you working because these things don't make sense to anyone else. They only make sense to you. But Lord, I'm going to follow this path nonetheless because your path is righteous. Your path brings about peace. Your path brings about resolution to things, even though the world around me tells me I'm crazy. I think of a quote I heard many years ago by a philosopher. That's the only title I know to give this person. He uses it himself, but his name is Noah Ben Shea. And he has a quote, and I want you to listen to it, because for me it's really powerful. He says this, I don't pray because prayer makes sense. I pray because my life without prayer doesn't make sense. See, very often we're looking for the answer in the first part of that. Why do you pray? Because it makes sense? No. It doesn't make sense. Don't let that dissuade you from praying. Pray because our life without prayer doesn't make sense. We need the presence of Christ in our life day in and day out for us to make sense of what's going on in the moment. It doesn't mean we understand everything that's going on in the moment. So that we can deal with everything that's going on in the moment, we need prayer in our life. And Jesus promises us, if we will come to Him, if we will lay our burdens down before Him, that He will give us peace. Does that mean that He's going to instantaneously take every trial and tribulation away from us? No, there are trials and tribulations that we must face. But in the midst of the trials and tribulations of life, Jesus offers us peace. May we this morning lay our burdens down before the Lord. May we open our hearts and our minds, and may we receive the peace of Christ, which passes all understanding, that we too might live on, not only in this life, but in the kingdom of heaven to come. Amen.